Greetings once again. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host. Welcome back. Deep in the bowels of the McBurney compound, I'm joined in studio, as usual, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So glad to have you on board as well. As we plow forward into another week here, I've got a, I think, a major announcement to make. A life moment? No? There's a name for it, what I'm trying to get at here, but not life-changing, but, well, anyway, I'll just get to it. Stop trying to figure out the psychobabble label for whatever it is and just get to it. This entire past week, now, I spend a lot of time in the car. I'm in the car a lot. I drive around all around town, around the states, around the western United States. Sometimes I even go east of the Mississippi River. This past week, I went through the entire week and I listened to no talk radio. None. And so it's finally happened. It's been happening for quite some time, but it's finally reached critical mass. I can no longer listen to talk radio. I'm not interested anymore. I'm not interested in people who are less talented than myself talking about things that they understand far less than I do. And I just cannot listen anymore to any of them. I drove around all this week with Bible study tapes in my car, listening to Bob Enyart's exposition on the book of Acts. And I didn't even check the top of the hour news. Why? Because I'm not interested anymore. I just don't care. I don't care to hear talk radio guys give their opinions, and I don't care to hear radio urinalists urinate the news on me every hour. I just can't do it anymore. So it's critical mass. I'm off talk radio. I never thought it would happen. I remember when I got back from overseas when I was in the service, and I was a young man, got out of the service at the age of 21. 21 years, 11 months, and like 29 days. I got out a few days before my 22nd birthday. I had been overseas for 4 years. For nearly 4 years, I had not come back to the United States at all. And I remember when I rented the furnished apartment there in Oceanside, California, at the Bunkers on Apple Street. All the furniture was yellow. I remember that. Yellow Formica furniture. Yellow Formica coffee table. Yellow Formica kitchen table. Yellow Formica nightstand. Yellow Formica bed. It was all yellow Formica. And I remember turning on the radio, and this is 1990. This is the spring of 1990. Turning on the radio and hearing Rush Limbaugh. And so began a lifetime of being entertained by talk radio. Until last week, when suddenly it was as if I had some kind of physical aversion, and I was not able to turn on the talk radio and listen to it. So there you have it. I'm off talk radio. And I'll tell you what I'm almost off of, but this would be very hard to get off of, is the internet. So the ads that pop up online these days are getting more and more risque, more and more overtly sexual. I mean ads for everything, from flash drives to cloud service to education. All the banner ads and the pop-up ads, they all have a girl in a tight shirt, and I don't understand. Well, I do understand. But it's really annoying that you can't read the news without semi-pornographic ads running up the side of the... It's just getting very annoying. I wish they'd cut that out. Well, there you have it. A day in the life of McBurney. A week, pretty much. So do we want to get to the news? So in 1998, walk with me now, come back in the Wayback Machine, 1998, when Bob Enyart and I produced what would become known as podcasts. I remember that we started doing the radio show on the internet. It was 1998. Nobody was doing that back then. You had to download it on a dial-up modem. So it would take us 4 hours to upload a one-hour program, and it would take our listeners about 3 hours to download it before they could listen to it. We were truly pioneers. I think you had to download it with a buggy whip. Yeah, it came on a horse and buggy. So 1998, we just by chance stumbled into the brave new world of internet broadcasting that would become known as podcasting. And I remember having a conversation with my extremely attractive audio engineer. And I remember declaring to her, I said, "My dear, within 5 years there will be no television and there will be no radio. Everything will be online in 5 years." So here we are 16 years later, and I have been proven incorrect. One of the few predictions I've made that has proven incorrect, but listen to this. Breitbart is reporting that cable firms have more broadband customers now than cable TV subscribers. Yep, the cable companies now, more people are subscribing to internet service than to cable TV. Let's see, the top cable companies had about 50 million broadband subscribers in the second quarter compared to, well, they've got about 5,000 more broadband subscribers than cable TV subscribers in the second quarter of this year, and that is projected to increase. So it's a little bit late, and it's running behind schedule. But the day is coming when there will be no television. Radio, I don't think radio ever goes away. No, I don't think radio ever goes away, except in my car. It's gone. It's over. I can't listen to it anymore. But so technology is slowly catching up with my vision. Finally, you people are slow. I figured it happened in 5 years. But then again, I am a visionary, obviously, having participated in one of the first podcasts in the history of such things. So there you have that. All right. So we go now into the politics file. From the Telegraph in London, I have a report from Spain. A Spanish senator has blamed Spain's national debt on what she referred to as subsidies offered to homosexuals. Her name is Luz Elena Sanín. She's a member of the Popular Party. And, of course, she now has been roundly condemned for what are being called homophobic comments. She was defending the austerity measures that have been introduced by the Spanish government. Austerity, by the way, means you stop spending money like a drunken sailor and just try to pay your bills. That's austerity. And people in Europe are freaking out about it. And Ms. Sanín, in a speech, insisted that the austerity measures were indeed necessary in order to, quote, pay back the debt run up by the previous socialist government's policy of subsidizing NGOs and homosexuals. And the crowd went wild. Now, she says that the former government, the former prime minister, drove the debt up over €1 trillion. She says he did too many favors for the gay community. She says, quote, "Otherwise, we wouldn't have this gaping economic hole." Yeah. Okay. Now, what did he do for the homosexuals? I was reading through the story here. Well, it doesn't really say what he did for the homosexuals. So we can't back up Ms. Elena Sanín, although we'd like to. We can't find any evidence that it was actually the homos that ran up the debt. Although, it's Spain. Who knows? Maybe a majority of people in Spain now have gone homo. I don't know. Well, members of Spain's opposition, Socialist Party, as you can well imagine, are outraged, along with the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transsexual communities. And they've all signed on to a statement calling her words, quote, a breeding ground for homophobia. Yeah. A minister of parliament there with the Socialist Opposition Party says that the senator must either apologize or resign. Resign, yeah. They say blaming NGOs and LGBT groups for the government's public debt is shameful. It's absurd. It's ludicrous. All it does is denote the popular party senator's homophobia. And now members of her own party are distancing themselves from her. Why? Because they don't want to get piled on by a bunch of homos. Nobody wants that. You can't say anything bad about the homos. I think I have... That may be the only story in this pile, speaking of a pile. Oh, nope, there's one more. But I'll save that for later, okay? My extremely attractive audio engineer can only handle so many stories of perversion and debauchery. So we'll save the other one here. I'll move it back. I'll move it back into... It is going to happen. I apologize. But I will move it back in the pile here. Meanwhile, we'll go on to serious news as we delve into the war file. From the New York Post, a report comes in across the Worldview desk. A British rapper, I said. Just that statement right there is bothersome. The fact that there are British rappers is troublesome to me, and it always has been. Not just British rappers, all rappers. Ever since rap first came upon the scene, I've been very leery of it, and I thought, surely this is a sign of the end. Well, maybe I was right. A British rapper whose father is awaiting trial in Manhattan for a pair of U.S. embassy bombings is a leading suspect in the beheading of American journalist James Foley. We all saw the video this week. I didn't actually watch the whole thing because back when Nicholas Berg was beheaded, I watched that whole video. And I can't do that again. I cannot do that again. Now, I don't know. I just don't have the... I was sitting with having a conversation with a doctor about concealed carry. When was this? Anyway, it was in Chicago, so it must have been a couple weeks ago. But I told him that I do indeed conceal carry, and the main reason I do it is that I hope if I'm ever put upon by someone who's threatening my life, that I'd be able to pull out the gun and point it at him and scare him away. And he said, well, you should never point a gun at someone unless you intend to shoot him. I said, well, I'm just saying I'd rather not shoot him. That's all. And now this fella, he said he would just shoot the guy. And I said, well, that's your prerogative. But me personally, I was in the Marines, and the one thing I hoped I'd never have to do was, well, number one, I hoped I'd never be shot at. But number two, I hoped I'd never have to actually shoot anybody because I thought I'd have a big problem with that. So anyway, I just hope that if you try to mug me and I pull my gun on you, I hope you don't make me shoot you because I'd rather not. So I guess I'm giving that as a, not a warning, but just a disclaimer that if I do point a gun at you, well, I probably will shoot you if I have to, but I'd rather not. Now, how did I get into that? Move on. Move on? Okay. Getting some directorial advice here from extremely attractive and annoyed, somewhat annoyed audio engineer. So, I don't know. I'm in a different mood than I have been since I'm off talk radio and I just can't listen to it anymore. I think I don't want to be like that anymore. I don't want to just sit here and read the news and give you my opinion. Or maybe I do. Maybe I don't. I don't know. We'll just keep on going with the show and we'll see what happens. All right. So we all saw... that's it. We saw the beheading. I couldn't watch the whole thing. And apparently you can if you want to, but I didn't. I know what they did. I've seen it before. Horrifying act of war directed at America, but directed specifically at the President of the United States. I mean, they put Barry's name in their mouth when they made that video. Did you see that? Yeah. I mean, did you hear it? Well, there's been a lot of speculation as to who the executioner was. And we've got some possibilities here that we'll run through. One of them is from the British rap community. His name is Abdel Majed Abdel Bari. Abdel twice there, huh? Just in case you missed it. Abdel Majed Abdel Bari. He recently tweeted a photo of himself holding up a different severed head. Yeah, they say they call him John the Beetle. You know, like the Beatles? Remember the Beatles? Skiffle band? Yeah, right? They played skiffle-type music. Became quite popular. Well, they call him John the Beetle, and they call a number of these British terrorists the Beatles. That's their nickname. Well, Abdel is under investigation. His father's an Egyptian-born militant who participated in the embassy bombings of Kenya and Tanzania back in 1998. Also under investigation are the brother of a British doctor who was once charged with kidnapping Western war correspondents and a former gang member who converted to Islam and left for Syria to fight in the jihad. And apparently former hostages who were previously held by the Islamic State have said that this former gang member, British type, said he's one of several jihadists that have been nicknamed the Beatles due to their British accents. And two of his cronies are referred to as George and Ringo. Now, this is the world of jihad. A confluence between the world of jihad and popular culture. It's truly bizarre. Now, the jihadists, they suspect of cutting off James Foley's head. They say he was an aspiring rapper known as El Ginny. And his music was actually played on BBC radio at one time. Yeah, that's my Abdel Bari. He's on an official list of British jihadists. He may be John of the John and Ringo and George crew. Also on the list is Rasul Islam. Islam's two older brothers were charged with kidnapping two Western war correspondents. But those brothers were released when the war correspondents did not appear to testify against them because they probably feared that their head would be chopped off. Another suspect is Ain Davis, 30-year-old former drug dealer and gang member, who is said to have converted to Islam and flown to Syria to wage jihad. So what is the attraction of the Islamists to the disaffected and criminal elements in Britain and apparently elsewhere? A lot of Europeans reportedly joining with the Islamic State to wage jihad. What is the attraction? Well, most of these fellows, if you'll notice, are criminals to one degree or another. And the bottom line is, anyone who carries out their daily work wearing a mask is probably just a criminal. And that's what the Islamic State is. It's a group of criminals who have banded together like an army and who are now acting like an army, who are now acting like a caliphate, but they're really just criminals. Kidnappers, bank robbers, rapists, and murderers. And that is what the Islamic State is. And unfortunately, as war-weary as we are all said to be, there is simply no way that the Islamic State will be stopped without a real war. Thank you.
So I remember August 1990. I'm in my apartment with the yellow coffee table, the yellow countertop. And I remember when Stevie Ray Vaughan died, and I remember listening to that song over and over and over. That takes me back. I actually remember where I was, because I was listening to talk radio on my patio overlooking Apple Street, Oceanside, California, sitting on a yellow Formica nightstand because I didn't have any other furniture. And drinking beer and listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan late into the night. In fact, we went to the beach that night. And we were on the beach, and we were listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan. And, well, you're not allowed to drink on the beach, and we were drinking at the time.
We means not me.
No, not my extremely attractive audio engineer. She wasn't involved in any way. Certainly not. But so we were approached by a couple officers, a male and a female, and had Stevie Ray going in the background, and the male officer asked us, what's going on, fellas? Well, we're just having a beer and having a toast to Stevie. And we talked a little bit about Stevie Ray Vaughan, and the female officer then came around out of the car, and she was a little more gung-ho. "You know there's no drinking allowed on the beach," she said, grabbing onto her nightstick, you know. And so the male officer put his hand on her shoulder, and he was like, "Hey, Denise, I'll handle this." And he told us, he said, "Fellas," he said, "I understand how you feel." He said, "I've been thinking about it all day myself." He says, I'll give you 5 minutes, guys. I want the beer to be gone, and I want you guys to be out of here." And he let us go when we probably should have been arrested or at least ticketed for drinking on the beach. And so anyway, we all got home safely. I mean, we weren't out getting drunk or anything. We were raising a toast to Stevie Ray Vaughan. All right, now we go from that to from the sublime to the ridiculous. Suge Knight has been shot. "Are you familiar with Suge Knight?" he said to his extremely attractive audience. No? Okay, Suge Knight is one of the founders of Death Row Records. It is a hip-hop and rap label it's one of the signs of the end that I saw back in the 90s when Death Row Records was founded. Well, he was shot early Sunday morning at a nightclub, surprisingly enough, in West Hollywood. Yep. Now, another man and a woman were also shot. They are expected to recover. What? The condition of Suge Knight? I really don't care. I don't care if he lives or dies, frankly. I'm reading through. Anyway, I didn't highlight anything about Suge Knight's condition because I really don't care. But the mayor of West Hollywood is very upset. He calls the shooting unacceptable. You remember the West Hollywood mayor. He made the World View just a few weeks ago when he said that the new design for the park in West Hollywood should be more dog-friendly and shouldn't be set up to glorify and worship children. You remember, right? Because hardly anyone in West Hollywood has any children. They got dogs, but they don't have children. So this is Mayor John D'Amico, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and I don't really care if I am or not. He said, quote, "This is regarding the shooting of Suge Knight." By the way, Suge was at a party to honor Chris Brown. And I don't know who Chris Brown is. I had to look that up. Apparently, he used to be famous. Chris Brown. He's a hip-hop type star.
Oh, I thought it was the mayor of San Francisco.
No. That's any twosome newsome, right?
That, I don't know.
That's, I couldn't even listen to Michael Savage this week. I just stole Michael Savage. Any twosome newsome is his.
Okay.
For Mayor Newsom up there. And I just stole his line. Want to give him? I'll send him a royalty check. Couldn't even listen to Michael Savage this week. And he's not really your typical talk radio guy. I mean, he's not like listening to Hannity or Levin
I think I would probably have some kind of physical reaction if Hannity were to come on in my radio now, in my car. So anyway, I didn't even care to try to tune in Michael Savage, and that's kind of unusual, which again goes to prove that I've had this life moment and I've somehow gone over the edge and I'm off talk radio. I just can't do it anymore. But where was I going with that? I was talking about Suge Knight, San Francisco. Oh, Chris Brown. That's right. Chris Brown apparently used to be famous, and they were throwing a party in honor of him because I think there's an award show coming up for these musician types. And as you can imagine, in Hollywood, they're having a party for the and honoring each other, you know, giving each other plaques, gold chains, gold teeth, all of that, right? So Suge Knight's at this party for Chris Brown when suddenly gunfire erupts. And Suge Knight was apparently shot twice. Another man and woman shot. But, oh, yeah, the mayor. Mayor John D'Amico, he says, regarding the Suge Knight shooting, he says, quote, "This was just a regular night of fun on the Sunset Strip, and it was disrupted by criminals. Hopefully the sheriff's department will find out who the person or persons were and prosecute them to the full extent of the law," unquote. That was John D'Amico. So you know how you can tell he's a lawyer? He said, "I hope the sheriff finds the person or persons." So that's only a lawyer talks like that. Anyway, he should be run out of town on a rail. He should be driven into the sea. John D'Amico. Yes, oh, the party was in honor of Chris Brown. Now, I have a tweet, actually, which that's what passes for a quote these days. It's a tweet from Chris Brown himself, who apparently used to be famous and is some kind of hip-hop artist. Here's what Chris Brown tweeted upon hearing that Suge and some other people at his party had been shot. Chris Brown tweeted this: "It's disappointing that we as a society can't have fun or enjoy ourselves without any altercation sometimes." Chris Brown, living proof that you need not speak nor understand English to be a hip-hop or rap artist. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for confirming our suspicions about you. Now, there was a separate murder spree in Los Angeles this morning after Suge and the others were shot at this party. Three people were murdered in the San Fernando Valley within 1 hour, and apparently just a random shooting spree. Some maniac just shooting at people random, shot one family on their way to church, shot another woman walking in her neighborhood, shot another guy, just on a mad killing spree. And, well, there you have it. That's life in the City of Angels this morning. Sunday morning coming down, as Johnny Cash might have said. So there we have that. Suge Knight, well, do we want to send out our condolences? Oh, no. Suge Knight has not died yet. So we'll withhold our condolences until word comes in on Suge Knight. Ironically, the founder of Death Row Records, and just about everyone associated with that label is actually dead now. I mean, the founders and that whole thing. I mean, most of them are actually dead. So quite prescient when they name their rap label. All right, now quickly into the war file before the next break. What special forces apparently attempted to rescue the American journalist James Foley, who was beheaded last week by the Islamic State. They tried earlier this year but failed to rescue Mr. Foley and other journalists. Apparently, the hostages who were being held by a group of British jihadists known as the Beatles, yep, the same group, well, the hostages could not be found. This report came out as President Obama's conduct attracted growing criticism after he played golf after giving a speech condemning the beheading of Mr. Foley. Now, this I did not know. I had heard that Barry had gone to play golf the same day he gave the speech. But listen to this. 4 minutes after leaving the podium and making remarks about the beheading of an American, James Foley, 4 minutes later, Obama teed off. He was seen laughing with friends and fist bumping them during a 5-hour round of golf, his seventh 18 holes in 10 days. So Barry has obviously checked out. There was an article to that making that point last week that the president has ceased. It's just, it's too much for him. It's overwhelming. He doesn't want to deal with it anymore. He's just playing golf. He's almost sitting in the corner and just wrapping his arms around himself and just weeping because he can't take it. You know, or he's actually a part of the Islamic State. It's got to be one or the other. I can't figure out which one. But let me ask you this question. If you are James Foley and you're told that you're going to have to make an anti-American statement and then be executed, I just can't understand how you allow yourself to get into that position. And maybe this is just tough talk, but I figure if a jihadist captures me, I'm going to make him kill me. He is going to have to kill me on my terms. I am not going to get on my knees and be beheaded. And I don't want to criticize James Foley. I'm just it's curious to me how one would allow oneself to get into that position. Very curious to me. And it's just as curious to me that the President of the United States, whose name was mentioned in the video before the beheading, could go and tee off 4 minutes after addressing the issue. And now I see the same half dozen bomb strikes played over and over, back to back, as people report on America's new campaign against the Islamic State. It's the same half dozen bombs played in a loop. And I'm sorry, Barry, but a round of golf and a half a dozen drone strikes just are not going to get it done. I am your somewhat disinterested host, Doug McBurney. Thank you, boys. Appreciate that. All right, now, I'm going to go deeper into the war file. I have a report here from Fox News. What's happening to the Christians in Nineveh province is of biblical proportion. It's a horror, a catastrophe of biblical proportion. And I can assure you that God is taking notes. Fox reports from Sulaymaniyya, Iraq. Sulaymaniyya. In a church in the northern Iraq city of Sulaymaniyya, a woman named Munira Aziz lays in the corner, her hip broken, her voice almost gone, and a piece of cardboard for a bed. The 74-year-old woman lies under the cardboard. It's the only protection she has from the blistering sun streaming in through the broken window. She's now about 170 miles from the home in Mosul that she may never see again, and she considers herself lucky. She says, quote, "We heard gunshots outside our door, and we knew the terrorists were killing Christians." She speaks in a raspy whisper, and she says, "But we hoped someone might rescue us. We cowered inside for 2 days, and then we knew we had to leave. We gathered some clothes, and we left at night." She says, "There were Christians everywhere we went, in every garden and every doorway. There are just so many with nothing and with nowhere to go. But I'm happy that we are now safe. We are the lucky ones." Endless Islamic State shelling had left her neighborhood demolished. Her and six other members of her church made their way to the Christian town of Karakash, only to find that the jihadists had overrun it too. And the next stop in her painful exodus was in Erbil, where they wandered the streets for days, sleeping in the gardens and on the roads, before getting back on the move again. So, Fox News reports that Mosul, Nineveh province, has been home to Christians for nearly 2,000 years. But now it has been purged of them. They were told to convert to Islam or die, and those who could fled, Munira Aziz among them. Now, in Sulaimaniyya, Munira and the other Christians found shelter, and hundreds of fellow refugees at the Marius Church. More than a dozen Christians pack into 100 square foot rooms to sleep in a scene played out at every Christian church in the region. The Christian churches are now refugee centers for Christians fleeing the brutality of the Islamic State. Fox reports that for many Christians in this part of the world, this is not the first time they've had to flee. In fact, Christians here have been persecuted for decades, first under Saddam Hussein, then by a succession of jihadist groups, amongst whom ISIS is merely the latest and the most vicious. Many of Iraq's Christians, according to this Fox News report, have never known a real home, only the feeling of moving from place to place. Christians told Fox News that converting to Islam, even under the threat of death, was never an option. A quote from one of the refugees, he says, "People say, quote, people say it would be easy to just become a Muslim. But my religion is everything I have now. Why would I give that up?" He said, "I would die first." And he very well may, as a matter of fact. So Fox reports that the hopes of the Christians fleeing persecution in Iraq, their hopes now lie with the Kurdish Peshmerga and the Iraq National Army, backed by U.S. airstrikes. Is that really where their hope lies? I don't think they have much hope if it lies there, but I think we just heard from this young Christian refugee that he does have a hope. And his hope doesn't lie with the Peshmerga or the U.S. Air Force or the Iraq National Army. His hope lies in eternal life with Jesus Christ. And just, it's so painful to try to comprehend what these people are going through. How they must sincerely get on their knees in the evening and pray for Christ to return soon. One more quote from Munira Aziz, Christian refugee, who has fled nearly 200 miles to avoid being murdered at the hands of the Islamic State. She says, "Please tell the world what is happening. Please tell the world we just want to go home. We just want to live," she said, as Barry tees off and ponders the broader military action. Also, so last week, and maybe for several weeks now, I have insisted that what we need to be doing is actively engaging in what is a religious war. And in doing so, I believe that we should convert the mosques to churches, convert the enemy headquarters into fortified missions, a mission being a preacher and an armed corps of defenders and a stockpile of weapons, bullets, gunpowder, and food. A mission, yes. And a report this week from jihadwatch.org online reports that the Islamic State has desecrated 45 churches in Mosul. They say 45 churches, Christian churches in Mosul that were destroyed have been converted into mosques and headquarters for the Islamic State terrorists. That's what they're doing to our churches. And if we don't return the favor, they will win. That's why I believe that we need leadership that understands the situation. And I don't think we have that right now. But don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. The American military is busy taking care of very important business. That's right. Chelsea Manning is reportedly set to begin transgender dysphoria surgery transition. I'm not sure what you call it. But you remember PFC Bradley Manning, who leaked all that secret information to that pasty-faced homo from Australia, the WikiLeaks guy? Forget his name. Well, Bradley Manning has changed his name to Chelsea, and Bradley now says that the military promised her gender reassignment treatment, but so far has given Private Manning nothing but lip service, he says. That's right. He says that his ability to express his gender identity has been restricted by the Army dragging its feet in giving him the gender assignment treatment that he was promised. He says, I have a quote here from PFC Manning. He says, ultimately, I just want to be able to live my life as the person that I am and to be able to feel comfortable in my own skin, unquote. Well, that's not going to happen, Brad. Okay, you're never going to be comfortable in your own skin. You're obviously mentally deranged. And the gender reassignment is only going to further propel you into delusion and confusion and eventually utter madness and probably suicide eventually if you don't come around. Manning, by the way, this is according to an NBC News report, is serving a 35-year sentence after being convicted of leaking classified documents. Manning became the first military inmate to ask for treatment for gender dysphoria. A true pioneer in the world of mental illness is Bradley Manning. Well, Chuck Hagel, who's the Secretary of Defense, believe it or not, it hurts to even say that. Chuck Hagel approved an Army recommendation, including counseling and approval for Bradley Manning to dress as a woman while in custody. While the Islamic State was gearing up and robbing banks and kidnapping for ransom and building their coffers and preparing for the attack, Chuck Hagel was focused on counseling and approval to dress as a woman for Bradley Manning while he's in jail. Chuck Hagel was busy as well. I know that Mr. al-Baghdadi was busy, but Chuck Hagel had a lot on his plate as well. Well, Manning's lawyer, back to Bradley Manning. Bradley Manning's lawyer says he's prepared to sue. He says the military's failure to comply with the treatment recommendations and protocols for Chelsea's diagnosed gender dysmorphia. Dysmorphia? Is that right? I thought it said dysphoria. Hold on here, ladies and gentlemen. You know how I am after... Well, here they call it gender reassignment up at the top. And then it says he was recommended treatment for gender dysphoria, and his lawyer calls it gender dysmorphia. It's probably all of the above. And the military's dragging of their feet violates Chelsea's well-established constitutional right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. So making Private Manning remain a boy is classified by his lawyer as cruel and unusual punishment. And when it comes, for me, ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to people who leak classified documents, the fact that Private Manning is allowed to continue to breathe the same air as you and I, to me, that's cruel and unusual punishment, not on him, but on us.
scrub the floors, they get the spaces in between. I want to live a life like that. I want to be just like a king. Take my picture by the pool, cause I'm the next big thing in Beverly Hills.
All right, boys. We're back. Yes, we may just finish the show early and just go hit the links. Just lost interest in the whole thing. I've got some reasons here to run through. Reasons to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. Reason number 799 to get or keep your kids out of the government schools from Charlotte, North Carolina. Kendra Turner is a hapless government school senior who was standing next to a classmate who sneezed. Sneezed, I said. Well, Kendra said, bless you. And a teacher freaked out. Teacher told her that that was a term for church, not for school.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Kendra says that the teacher said, we're not going to have any godly speaking in here, not in my class. And so Kendra stood up and said, hey, I've got a constitutional right to say bless you. And, well, then the tensions just, it was a tension convention, I can assure you. She had to finish the class period, the student did, who said, bless you. She had to finish the class period in-school suspension, which is where I think they put you in a room by yourself and let you just ponder what you've done. Well, so Kendra's parents were told by the school officials that the teacher says that their daughter was aggressive and disruptive. Yeah. And anyway, so the family's upset. This hapless government school senior, her youth pastor disagrees with the school's actions. The youth pastor, yeah. He says this was something that had come up previously in the last few weeks, just since the beginning of school, and I shared with all of the students what their rights were. So here we have a subversive youth pastor, obviously encouraging Christian kids to be combative and disruptive with their godless heathen teachers. Yeah, anyway. So I've always been against saying bless you when someone sneezes. I don't know what it is.
I don't get that.
To me, bless you, when you say God bless you, to me that's a term of endearment. That's a serious thing to say. When I wish the blessings of the almighty living God upon someone, it's not just because you're wiping snot off your sleeve. It just doesn't seem appropriate to me. But that's just me, and if you do say bless you, I got nothing against you, okay? It's fine. I prefer Gesundheit. I don't know. I don't know what it means. So that, to me, is appropriate. If someone sneezes, Gesundheit. I think that means may your breath come back to you or something in German. Anyway.
Is it one of those superstitious things?
Well, people feel like you have to say something after people sneeze. I don't understand where that comes from. That's right. I think it is. It's an old pagan superstition that if you sneeze, your soul could escape. So you got to say something to try to. I never got that. But hey, if you do, that's cool. Now, if you send your kids to the government school, now I've got a problem with you. And this youth pastor, if this has been a problem going on since the beginning of school, you got teachers who are just overtly, aggressively godless. I mean, why wouldn't you encourage the parents to take their kids out of this godless institution, for crying out loud? You call yourself a youth pastor? Obviously, the man is unqualified. Let's see. Oh, there are a number of expressions, apparently, that are banned as part of the rules at this particular school, and the teacher has them listed on a whiteboard. She has things you can't say listed on a whiteboard in the class. And among them are bless you. Well, let's see. Okay, whatever. Okay, that's it. Reason number 799, you can't even say God bless you in school. Reason number 800, to get or keep your children out of the government schools, comes to us from South Pasadena High School, Pasadena, California. Authorities have foiled a planned mass killing at South Pasadena High School. A couple of students there planned to kill three staffers at the school and as many students as possible in a mass shooting plot. Yeah, but the plan was uncovered, And the school district has now that the plot has been foiled, the school district has sent a letter to parents. And the letter says in part, quote, "The police have the situation under control. And there is currently no threat to students or employees at South Pasadena High School." I mean, other than the threat of eternal damnation, that's the one threat that still lingers at South Pasadena High School, that you could be eternally separated from God by this godless pack of heathen child molesters who run the schools. Did I just say that? I offended a young lady last week when I said, she said, "Well, why do you homeschool your kids?" I said, "Well, the government schools are run by a bunch of godless child molesters." And she was stunned. So I don't recommend you say that to people. I think that might be a little over the top. But, I mean, deep down in my heart of hearts, that's one of the top reasons that I don't send my daughters to the government schools, is because it's run by a bunch of godless child molesters. But I need to come up with a more tactful way of expressing my discomfort with the current state of affairs in our public school systems. So, yeah, she was just stunned. But she's got a little kid, and she's trying to figure out what to do, whether to send her to government school or private school or homeschool. So I tried to encourage her to homeschool, but I think I need to be a little more tactful. So reason number 800, your child could be shot at school by fellow students. And the eternal damnation. I think that was reason number one back when we started this list. So we'll move on to reason number 801. 801 to get or keep your children out of government schools. This comes from Todd Starnes over at Fox News. Hapless government school student mother Jessica Andrews saw a copy of the Pledge of Allegiance that her daughter had, and she could not believe her eyes. Yeah, she says she had an oh my gosh type of feeling because the school's version of the pledge was missing a few words. The words it was missing were the words "under God," as you can well imagine. Yes. Now, Jessica's daughter is a fourth grader at a government elementary school. Where is this? Does it say? Chucker Creek. Any idea? Aiken, South Carolina. So this could be South Carolina. It could be North Carolina. It's one. It's in the Carolinas. It's in the Bible Belt. And this mom, she says that we're a religious family, and she lives in Aiken, which is a very religious community. And she was surprised when she realized that the school's version of the pledge did not include an acknowledgement to the Almighty. At which point I said, "Are you kidding me that you were, are you kidding me that you couldn't imagine that you were surprised? It's a completely godless organization. How could you possibly be surprised?" But then I realized she thinks she's a religious family, and she sends her kids into the Antichrist temple every day for an education. Hapless, poor woman. Well, a teacher claims it was just a mistake. And you know how mistakes happen when you cut and paste things and you're printing stuff up. The teacher corrected it and sent a corrected version to all the parents along with an apology. She says, "Please forgive me. I respect our country and what it was founded on," said the teacher, never mentioning God in her apology, by the way. The principal at Chucker Creek Elementary in Aiken says that indeed the children recite the pledge every day and that he swears that the words "under God" are included every day. Every single morning they refer to God, and then they spend the rest of the day teaching the kids that God doesn't exist. Yes. Now, I said that, not the principal. He would never say that out loud, but that's what he does every day. Anyway, this hapless mother says she's using the incident as a life lesson for her little girl. Is that the term I was looking for earlier? I've had a life lesson? I don't think that works. Anyway, there's a term I was looking for. It's an event that's big in your life. Like, your marriage is considered one of them. Buying your first home. It's a life moment. Anyway, I'll keep straining and searching for the term. An over the hill moment. That's probably closer to the truth. Anything else from the good solid Christians out there in Aiken who send their kids to the godless pile of child molesters running the government schools? Let's see here. Oh, the mom is using this as a life lesson for her little girl. She said, "I told her that the government and a lot of people don't like God. Some people are offended by Christianity," I told her. She says, "I try to be as real with my kids about their faith as I can be. I don't want to sugarcoat everything. In fact, I throw my children into the lion's den every day. I roll the dice on the state of their soul, the eternal destiny of their soul every day, because I want my kids to be tough, and I want them to be missionaries. I want them to get out there and save the world for Jesus. Go into the public schools." Mom, your daughter should not be going up against adults who are hell-bent on brainwashing her and if at all possible, seducing and molesting her, okay? Not a wise decision. Not a good life lesson to give your daughter. Get her out of the government schools, Mom, please. Oh, Ted Starnes, the Fox News guy, he says, "We need more moms like Jessica Andrews." Oh, this is why I can't listen to talk radio anymore. Because it's populated by morons like Todd Starnes, who can't see the forest for the trees. Finally, reason number 802 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. The school board for the city of Compton in Los Angeles, California, has passed a measure that would allow the school police force to keep an AR-15 rifle in the trunk of their car. So first of all, if you're sending your kids somewhere that needs its own private police force, I mean, not private, but it's the school's police force, and they need semi-automatic weapons, you might want to reconsider sending your kids there every day. That's all. That's reason number 802.
Is that a military school?
Let me see here. Compton, let me see. Compton Unified Police. No, nope, it's not a military school.
Okay.
It's not, and the kids don't have a shooting class. And so, the founder of the Compton Democratic Club, Francisco Orozco, told a radio station there in an interview regarding the cops at school now keeping AR-15s in their trunk. Well, the founder of the Compton Democrat Club said that the escalation of weapons is very unnecessary. The school police has not even earned the right to carry handguns, says the Francisco Orozco, who's a Democrat. Well, I'm frightened at the idea that anybody needs all these guns around the school. And I can tell you, Mr. Orozco, I know that guns make you uncomfortable, but the nature of the government schools these days means somebody there needs to have weapons. And that right there should be a giant red flag warning to everyone, but it's not. These hapless parents, they just keep sending their kids there. And I've given you over 800 reasons just in my brief broadcast career to get or keep your kids out. But you people just keep doing it. All right. I got a few more stories here that I just don't care. Michael Brown down in Ferguson, Missouri. I could care less. I'm not even going to do it. I just don't care. From the domestic tranquility file, murder charges have been filed against a man accused of killing the pregnant wife of a United States Marine in California. The young lady was 3 months pregnant, and searchers found her body about 150 feet down a mine shaft out in the desert. Her former neighbor, Christopher Lee, 24 years old, has been arrested in Alaska. He could face life in prison without parole, possibly even the death penalty for murdering a pregnant woman. Possibly the death penalty. There's a red flag for you. So this young lady had been missing for quite some time. And several people told investigators that the victim and the suspected murderer were having an affair. Yeah, they were having an affair, and that led to murder, which happens a lot more than you might think, by the way. Just awful, awful that this kind of thing is tolerated. If you tolerate adultery, people end up losing their lives. It's a crime, and it should be a crime, and it would save people's lives if people got arrested for adultery again. All right, finally, from the news of the economy, smuggled cigarettes have become the new currency of organized crime. Organized criminals find them more profitable and less risky than selling dope. So smuggling tobacco has become a high-profit, low-risk criminal enterprise because there are no set penalties for the cigarette traffickers. You know, if you're dealing in heroin, there's minimum, what are they called, mandatory minimum sentences. You go to jail for 25 years. But with the cigarettes, it's like, I don't know, it's like a shoplifting charge. So this is becoming big business. A recent report stated that over half of the cigarettes sold in New York State were smuggled. Half! That's pretty impressive. New York, by the way, has the highest tax on cigarettes. Many smokers are avoiding these higher taxes by buying their smokes from criminal syndicates. People who would never do anything criminal in their life are buying smuggled cigarettes. That's because normal people can always outsmart the bureaucrats. And when they plan to raise taxes on cigarettes, the smart smokers start buying their cigarettes from the mafia. That's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview. I may or may not be back next week. I could lose interest in this whole thing. I'll let you know if I get back on talk radio or not. I probably won't. But I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, and American Right to Life. Should the Lord tarry, I'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.